Hopkins for the Arts.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today, we're going to hear the soundtrack to Florida This Week, which is a discussion about state and local politics that we produce for WEDU-TV and that we carry Mondays at 11 o'clock here. Got some really good guests today, including Adam Smith, Mike Deasons, April Schiff, and Vic DeMaio. They're all coming up in a little bit. We're going to talk about some state and local politics. Later on, I'm going to talk about my recent absence from WMNF, and I've got a message for our community, so stick around. This is 88.5 FM.
Coming up next, legislators in Tallahassee want to limit Amendment 4. Florida's wealthiest man stands to make money from that new toll road proposal. The South Florida massage parlor owner has strong political ties that go right to the top. And can this man sign up a million new voters in the Sunshine State? Political Insights next on Florida This Week.
Welcome back. This week our panelists are Adam Smith is with Mercury Public Affairs, Mike Deason is an independent journalist, April Schiff is a political consultant and a Republican, and Vic DeMaio is a political consultant and a Democrat. Well, it's so great to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, the controversy continues over Florida's Amendment 4, which gives convicted felons who have served their sentences the right to vote.
In Tallahassee, some state lawmakers are pushing a proposal that would require people who've been convicted of a crime to clear up any court-related financial obligations before they can vote. Here's what the ballot summary said. This amendment restores the voting rights of Floridians with felony convictions after they complete all terms of their sentence, including parole or probation. The amendment would not apply to those convicted of murder or sexual offenses who would continue to be permanently barred from voting unless the governor and cabinet vote to restore their voting rights on a case-by-case basis. The amendment was passed overwhelmingly last November. Now, some Republicans in the legislature want to ensure that ex-felons also pay any court costs before their voting rights are restored. Defenders of the amendment say that was not part of the intent. The question for our panel, did voters intend to require that court fees be paid before voting rights are restored?
All right, Mike, let's toss that question to you. Is that the intent of voters, that the court fees be paid?
No, I do not think that is the case. Voters went out and said if someone has served their time, they should have their voting rights restored. But the legislature thinks that Florida voters are stupid and that they are omnipotent and know what should be done with this state. And they don't trust the voters. And if the voters vote for something, an amendment, then the legislature doesn't quite like it. Then they change it and fiddle fart with it all around. It's the reason that you need more than 60% of the voters to vote for something, because when it was 50%, the legislatures went, oh my goodness, they have the same rights as we do. 50% wins.
April, did he just say fiddle fart?
I love that. That was my fault. That was a great word. Right, that just made me laugh.
So April,
I love it. Thank you.
What say you? I mean, should people who serve their sentences also pay their court costs before their voting rights are restored?
Personally, when I look at the ballot language and it says all terms of their sentence shall be completed, I would consider that when the judge imposes that you have to pay court costs and you have to pay fines, that that's part of the term of their sentence. So to me, I would say that's true. I think the bigger problem is, not only on state amendments, but on local amendments, there has to be a better vetting process here, because it's always, they need to say, put this in place and see what it's really going to happen once we pass it, and do more of a test before they allow it on the ballot, because every single amendment that comes up is subject to this type of reorganization and interpretation. Mm-hmm. And it should be done beforehand.
It's not only the court cost, it's what is a sexual offense?
Exactly. That's vague.
That is really vague.
Extremely a vague term, and it's not a term defined anywhere so they can say this is what it means.
Anybody who's followed the history of this knows that this constitutional issue was a racist, terrible, and a very, very unusual restriction. But in terms of this legislation implementation, it's reasonable at least to argue that that's what was expected, that voters expected
to be paid.
The court cost. I'm not saying that's right, but it's reasonable to argue that.
All right, so if you just got out of prison and you're faced with 50 or 100 or 1,000 bucks in court costs and you have trouble getting a job, what do you do?
Yeah, it's not right. But that said, these court costs are very arbitrary in a lot of ways. These are counties that basically, county commissions that are foisting the expenses onto the courts, onto the offenders themselves. So you can go to one county and the court cost is $100. The next county, it's $500.
It becomes a poll tax, though, in many ways, because as you say, somebody gets out of prison, finding a job is not that easy, and all of a sudden they have to pay to be able to vote, and that's what kept so many people from being.
They have to pay to be able to finish their sentence, and then they can vote. Because
although some judges say that's not what they considered part of the sentence.
There's a difference between paying the fine,
the fines,
and paying the court costs, the administrative costs.
Yeah, this is voter suppression, plain and simple. If you hear the word voter suppression, this is exactly what this is all about. Because let's be honest here, the Republicans are scared to death that a majority of these people signing up to vote are going to be registered Democrats, even though there'll be some Republicans voting too. And this, from the time this thing was initiated, this was started out, and it ended up to be the fact that this would be a game changer in the state of Florida, on the local, state, and even national level for elections, because this is going to allow more Democrats to vote, which unfortunately are people that are stuck in this revolving door of having to pay fines. And actually, there's some state and federal statutes preventing the civil part of these things to be imposed. So this we're separating the fine of the civil part of what's imposed on the person who's got the record versus somebody who's incarcerated.
Here's the bottom line question, I think. Did the judge impose the costs, or does the county impose the costs? If the judge imposed the costs, then it's part of the sentence, right?
Agreed.
If the county imposes the costs, then isn't it just not part of the sentence?
That's left up to...
It's gray area. Yeah. It's gray area. And but the other issue that this highlights is you have a lot of these local courts that their local governments don't want to fund properly, so then they stick the funding on the offender. And it basically is a perpetual sentence. The people that are least able to
pay. Is it what Mike said? Is it a tax? If you're funding government through this fee, is it essentially a tax, and therefore is it a poll tax?
It's a penalty.
I think you can argue.
Okay, go ahead.
It's a penalty for the behavior that you.
So it's part of the penalty that you must pay in order to make right with society.
That makes sense to me.
But to Adam's point, part of the reason that some of these courts don't have the money is because the legislature keeps cutting the money that the courts are able to get from various funds, and they still have to do the same amount of work, sometimes more work. They have less money, so that's the reason that happens. So is that the fault of the offender that the courts have less money? No, it's the fault of the legislature. Okay,
what's
women in Tallahassee
here is maybe 1.5 million people who might get their voting rights restored pretty quickly if this goes through without the legislature interfering. If the legislature gets in there, then a whole lot less people might have their voting rights restored automatically.
And it's not brain surgery to figure out why they're doing it. They're doing it for a specific purpose of not allowing these people to vote, and we're going to get into later on about Andrew Gillum's push
to
vote.
It's after the fact, though. These people have already registered to vote. They voted last election.
That's the point. How do you take it away? Now you're going to take people of sight. How do you take that away?
That's what the legislature may have to figure out when they're doing this, but it is after the fact. The election supervisors started registering them the minute it happened, which was in November.
Right.
The Florida
Senate, by the way, takes a more lenient view. They're not talking about requiring those court costs, administrative costs. The Florida House is, so that'll be ironed out.
But the sex offender part of it comes through the Florida Senate. The attempted rape or something like that, they classify as a sexual offense. It's really murky.
There needs to be a better definition.
That comes back to that's the problem with the ballot language, because the ballot language describes something that doesn't exist.
Right.
So they can't. You have to redefine everything to make it fit into the ballot.
This is going to end up in the court. This is going to be just like the marijuana issue. Right. And there's no question, either way, it's going to end up in
and
the court.
And I'm sure you take the vote away from people who've signed up. And see, this was the 67 county supervisor of elections studied this issue. And they said, if you go in and sign the form and say you can vote, you're done.
Okay, but is there a felony if the person votes and they're not supposed to vote? Some people go to jail for that.
I think potentially there is. Okay. Well, the website Florida Phoenix is reporting that the effort in the state legislature this session for a new toll road system through north central Florida and parts of other Florida could benefit the richest man in Florida.
He's Thomas Petterfee, reportedly a member of Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago Club and a resident of Billionaire's Row in Palm Beach. Petterfee bought about 500,000 acres a few years ago, a tract the size of Rhode Island, in the rural panhandle, including land in Lafayette, Dixie, and Taylor counties. Part of the land includes a proposed and already approved massive development corridor in very rural Taylor, where one of the toll roads would go. Petterfee, as well as two men who sold him the land 5 years ago, have given hundreds of thousands of dollars to Florida Republican political committees and candidates. This is just one of three new proposed toll roads in Florida. The exact corridors for the new roads, top priorities for Republican State Senate President Bill Galvano from Bradenton, are not yet mapped out for the public to see.
So, Adam, is there a big demand to build these new toll roads? Is there a conflict of interest? And with Bill Galvano being in favor of this idea, does it have a pretty good chance of passing at least the Florida Senate?
Well, first of all, we have a long, noble history of building roads that get developers rich. No, there's not a great big demand unless you're one of the people in those counties that wants to see a lot of houses and maybe some economic. A lot of those counties are suffering from tough economy, but it's absolutely a recipe for sprawl, which is nothing new in Florida, but it's got an excellent chance of passing. Mm.
Because Galvano is the Senate president.
Because Galvano is the Senate president, and there's a lot of support for building these toll roads.
This has happened in the legislature in the past, and it's been stopped immediately because it did not have the support that it needed. But what we're seeing this time is it is gaining the support that it needs to probably propel it. So what will happen is the funding initially is for a study of the three roads. Mm-hmm. The roads wouldn't be working until 2030.
Should we be suspicious that at least in the direction of one of the toll roads, this donor to the Republican Party, who happens to be the wealthiest person in Florida, has a lot of land in...
I think longstanding history shows that wealthy people in Florida invest in land because it's a great investment and their money's going to grow there.
Rob, they also stand
to make money off of roads when they come through.
A major donor and super rich guy is going to benefit from the move of the legislature?
This is a prime example of the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules,
right.
And it works their way through.
And makes more money that way.
But it truly is. That's where the influence is. The legislature is influenced by money.
Right.
Always has been. Always will.
But aren't we safe? What April said is that there's going to be a study. So if we need this road, there's going to be a study that would prove whether or not we need the road. So we're safe. It's not just a boondoggle. There will be a study.
The legislature wants to show.
That the motivation behind it is not only economic for the communities it's going to go through, but also evacuation routes as well as other infrastructure, because they're planning to run not only roads but internet and water and sewer and those sorts of things into these rural areas, which will give them the ability. We're supposed to have 5 million more people in this state by 2030. So by the time the roads are up, we're probably going to need them.
And I-75 North is a little crowded, but we do have a little change of philosophy from a previous governor who wanted all the roads to be toll roads. And DeSantis is now coming out, says, you know, that penalizes a lot of the blue collar people who have to use the road. So there is a drastic difference in philosophy between DeSantis, who is in a honeymoon period right now, trying to say the right things. So there is a lot of stuff going on.
All right. Well, U.S. Senator Marco Rubio wants a federal probe into the massage parlors that prompted high-profile arrests on the southeast Florida coast earlier this year, suggesting that some of the businesses appear to be operating like organized crime.
Rubio says he wants the Justice Department to look into these parlors, follow the money trail, and prevent human trafficking from Asia. The senator's comments come months after several agencies launched investigations into possible human trafficking and sex at massage parlors in Palm Beach, Martin, Indian River, and Orange counties. Those investigations netted such prominent alleged customers as New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft and billionaire financier and longtime GOP donor John Childs. Last week, Democrats on Capitol Hill called for an FBI probe of the former owner of the Orchids of Asia Day Spa in Jupiter, Cindy Yang, where Kraft was arrested over her ties to President Trump. Mother Jones Magazine reports Yang marketed access to President Trump. Yang, though, says she barely knows the president.
So, Victor, there are massage parlors all over the Tampa Bay area, all over South Florida. Is this human trafficking? Is that what goes on behind those doors? And should they be investigated, as Senator Rubio
said? Victor's the one to know.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure why I got this topic, but I'll try to wing this as best I can. Miss Cindy Lang, it's funny to see her, the stories have come out, because there's pictures of her and Rick Scott, and her and Matt Gaetz, and her and Donald Trump. And yet, when they asked Donald Trump, he says, I guess kind of like Stormy Daniels, he's never heard of this woman before. So she's been very prolific. And evidently, they make a lot of money at these places, because she was able to write a $50,000 check. Although I say some of the research I said.
But she sold her interest in this massage parlor.
And she shows up with cash. She doesn't use checks a lot as much as she actually uses cash. So
you can't pay $50,000 cash into any campaign or committee. I'm sorry, that's not lawful.
Right. But anyway, evidently, these places do make a lot of money. And sadly, the part with the question you asked is this: they do prey on a lot of women who come from other countries trying to buy their freedom and look for a better life. And unfortunately, they get kind of sold into slavery. We had a situation in St. Pete here on Gandy near the dog track of a strip club over there that had some women that were in that cycle. So these places are notorious.
But compounding the issue, not only the human trafficking, which is terrible, is the potential influence peddling that she is accused of doing for the Chinese government, for example, entree on to powerful and rich people at Mar-a-Lago. This is where it raises a more serious level. I mean, not that human trafficking is...
She says, for instance, though, that she barely knows President Trump, even though she's got pictures taken.
Said he didn't know George... He never met George Conway either at one point. I mean, people's memories go away. He said that recently that...
Well, and these politicians meet thousands and thousands of people. Right. They don't remember everybody that they've met. And this woman has been accused of actually peddling that influence, and there are pictures where she shows her with businessmen from China that she's gotten access to some of these functions.
And supposedly she was charged like $50,000 a hit to get a picture with a Donald and Donald Jr. And
I mean, I don't know whether she is, but the specter of the influence peddling is frightening.
It is. But I also find the human trafficking issue of these places to be extremely devastating.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that we've noticed in the past few years that it's a lot more prevalent than any of us ever really realized, and that's coming to light now. And we really have to focus on that issue and eradicating that problem in this country, and particularly in the state of Florida. There's a lot of it here, right in our own backyard.
Right here in Tampa.
Tampa Bay. Full of it. Yeah. And it has to stop,
so
because
Rubio's
these people
right.
are dangerous.
We've got to look into
these
places.
Can't hurt.
Yeah. Yes. But I think the distinction is, well, you know, should consenting adults, both the customer and the client, people who are consenting adults, should they be able to have these kind of relationships? But certainly, if somebody's being held against their will, human trafficked, that should be, you know, we should get to the bottom of that and end all of those places right away, shouldn't we?
Yeah, but that's the problem. A lot of people initially heard about this and thought, well, it's consenting adults, it's a lonely old widower. But no, in many, this is not unusual to have this human trafficking at all, and this is not in any way, shape, or form a victimless crime.
It's modern-day slavery. These women are not allowed to go anywhere without someone from the spa watching them. They are not free to leave. They are slaves to the sex business.
They actually live in those spas. They have rooms in the back where they sleep, and they stay there, and they're not allowed to go anywhere. That's just not right.
It's not consenting
it's bad.
Adults.
It's, no. They're not consenting adults at all. They're being forced to
And
do
what
things.
A good job local law enforcement did. I'm serious. I mean, they nailed this dead on and did some really good detective work.
Well, they showed up as cable guys and put cameras in the thing, and now now Robert Kraft is actually fighting the release of the video.
Well, can
as
you blame
we speak.
Him?
Yeah,
you know what? That's something I could go without
yeah,
seeing.
I don't see
if you drive up and down Florida, if you go anywhere in Florida outside of Southeast Florida, you continue to see these places that look like they are Asian spas that offer massages, and what goes on behind those closed doors. If women are held in, you know, against their will, that's
nobody
outrageous.
Knows. Yes,
and right
yes,
here on Kennedy
yes.
Boulevard in Tampa, they've been
they're
a,
all over
been
the
an
place.
Effort, yeah,
yeah.
To get rid of them.
Well, former Florida Democratic gubernatorial candidate Andrew Gillum has a big goal. He wants to register at least 1 million new voters in an effort to make the state swing blue in the 2020 presidential race.
The former Tallahassee mayor is calling the voter registration drive Bring It Home Florida. That's a political action group named after his 2018 campaign slogan. Also this week, the Florida Democratic Party announced a plan to spend $2 million with the goal of signing up 200,000 Floridians to vote. That would be much better than it's done in the recent past. In 2017, the party said it registered only about 80,000 new voters.
So, April, how big of a job would it be in the next year and a half or so to register 1 million people? Can Gillum's organization do that?
That's huge. It's huge. 1 million voters is huge. Try and do that across the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. I guess if they had enough money and enough manpower and enough, you know, bodies and boots on the ground, they may be able to pull that off. But that's pretty aggressive. I don't see how they're going to accomplish
now,
that.
Now, he wants to make sure that Florida's competitive and turn blue in 2020. Is Florida a purple state, or is it really a red state?
You know, it leans purple, I think, because on a statewide basis, it's been red for a long time. But on more local races and local areas, you see that it's turning blue in your more metropolitan areas. You can register all the voters you want, because it doesn't matter unless they vote. So the turnout is more important than the registration. Obviously, you have to have them registered to get them to vote, but the turnout and the tracking of those voters and really staying on top of them is the most important
part.
So
whether
they'll pull it off.
It's still
a
purple state.
I mean,
despite all the statewide races that Republicans won in the last go-around.
Think about it. Every statewide race, high-profile statewide race,
doesn't matter by how much.
10 years has been a one-point race.
Right.
It wouldn't have taken much at all difference to change that to a
Democrat. But they haven't been able to change it yet.
And that's why Amendment 4 is so important, and that's why registration people so important,
but
because these last two races were so close that it could make anything could make it.
There are more registered Democrats than Republicans, and
yes.
have been for a long time.
Always have been.
So either the Republican Party is doing a great job on a statewide basis. Go ahead, say you are, April.
We are.
And, the Democrats are particularly inept.
A lot of those Democrats are still Southern Democrats.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's true.
And they are conservatives.
But if you look
those old conservative Democrats are going to vote Republican every time because they agree with the values of the Republican candidates, which is why we're having Republicans win in the state of Florida.
But if you look at what happened in 8 and 12 with Obama coming in here and winning the state, this is exactly the model that Gillum's trying to reproduce to get those people registered.
But 1 million people is a lot of people.
That's pretty good.
If they only got 80,000 in the last cycle, how can they get 1 million this time?
It's exactly what the Democrats need to do. They have not had a big concerted voter registration drive. They have it when a well-funded presidential campaign comes along. But even then, he's right to get going early and early, even if he's not going to get
Okay, so one of the trends here in Florida is more and more people are registering independent, no party affiliation. So where do those people go, and are those reliable voters, and should candidates chase after them, and what impact do they have?
They're the largest growing segment of voters right now. So if you ignore the NPAs, the nonpartisan voters, you're going to lose.
If we had open primaries, the NPAs would grow by huge numbers,
but
I believe.
That's true. And a lot of people will go back and forth. They will register in a primary as a party person so they can choose a candidate in the primary, and then they'll go back to NPA for the November elections.
Right.
Which we're free to do in this country. We can change our party affiliation at any time.
Mm-hmm.
But
and there's an effort to open up the primary.
Yeah. Well, the problem with an open primary, a primary is designed in and of itself to choose the party's candidate. So if you're choosing the Republican Party candidate, why would the Democrats even want to participate in that process?
I got the feeling we're going to be talking about open primaries over the next 18 months. Before we go, what other big story should we be paying attention to? Mike, let's start with you. Your other big story?
My other big story is that the Straz campaign, which has used much negative ads so far, is going to get even worse. Someone high up in the campaign said, we have so much opposition research against Jane Castor, and we are going to use it all by Election Day. So I perceive this as getting nastier and nastier until the vote in April. It just the new one where Straz is accusing her of double dipping because she gets a pension is mild compared to, I don't know what it is, to what they say they have. So be prepared. It's going to get muddy.
All right. They may have it, but it's all weak sauce.
All right. Victor, you're on the big story.
Listen, if they don't have it,
they'll make it up. As we speak right now, the sausage is being made in Tallahassee. They're notorious for wasting a lot of time up there and doing a lot of crazy stuff, like arming teachers is a bill going on. But I want people to listen to what I'm going to say, because the Sadowski Fund, what we have is a housing crisis for low and middle income people to live in their Sadowski Fund is part of the doc stamps that goes to provide tax credits and so forth. The governor wants to fully fund it. The Senate wants to fully fund it, and the House has zero in there. So. Mm-hmm. Please call your don't waste your time with the Democrats. Call the Republican legislators and tell them you want that money funded fully in the Sadowski Fund to be able to fund affordable housing in the state.
Republicans, because they have control in Tallahassee.
Correct.
April, your other big story.
Smokable medical marijuana. Another one of those amendments that was messed with and fouled with after it was passed. But
Fiddle fart.
Yeah, I love that word. Governor DeSantis said it early on, as soon as he was elected, let's do this, let's fix it. It's fixed. And they actually sold the first smokable medical marijuana in the state last year, yesterday.
Numbers are so high here in Florida.
Because he's doing what he says he's going to do.
Adam, you're on the big story.
My story of the week is that the most even-handed journalist in Tampa Bay and one of the best interviewers anywhere in the business is back in action at WMNF, some dude named Rob Laura.
Yes. Thank you, Adam. Thank you all for a great show. Thanks for watching Florida This Week. Remember, you can watch this show on the web at wedu.org and continue the conversation on Facebook.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night, and my guests were on the panel Adam Smith with Mercury Public Affairs. Mike Deason is an independent journalist and former investigative reporter at a local TV station. April Schiff is a political consultant and a Republican. And Vic DiMaio is a political consultant and a Democrat. We were talking about the effort in Tallahassee to limit Amendment 4. We also talked about Florida's wealthiest man standing to make money from the proposal to expand toll roads here in Florida. We talked about the ties between a chain of massage parlors and politicians going right up to President Trump. And we also talked about an effort by Andrew Gillum, the former Democratic candidate for governor here in Florida, to register 1 million new voters in Florida in the next year and a half. Can he do it? Those are the topics, and you can email your comments into the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. We already got some comments, I think, about Amendment 4, and I'm going to read those in a moment. By the way, we're live on my Facebook page and also on Blanny Whalen's Facebook page. So if you're friends with me or Blanny, you can see this program live. And you are listening on 88.5 FM and on WMNF.org. Well, 5 weeks ago, I was fired from WMNF and given a few minutes to leave this place, the place that I've worked at since 1978. I'm not going to go over the events that led up to it or which took place in the last 5 weeks. During that time, I posted several large memos on social media. There was a lot of discussion on social media about the controversy. I'm not going to go back over the reasons I was fired nor the reasons that I disagreed with my firing. The response to my firing was immediate and overwhelming. Thousands of people signed petitions. They wrote letters. They came to meetings. They canceled their donations to WMNF. And they spoke out on social media, all or nearly all objecting to my firing. The people who were outraged include regular WMNF listeners, volunteers, staff, grassroots activists, mayors, former members of Congress, other journalists, bank executives, several local talk radio hosts from both liberal and progressive stations, NPR and PBS executives, former co-workers, and former volunteers from around the country and around the world. There is no way I could ever repay the kindness that all those people have shown me in the past 5 weeks. I don't know how I could ever repay what they've done for me. Thank you. After a more than 7-hour meeting last Monday night, the people who sit on the MNF board decided to make a decision in my favor. The board is comprised of several MNF volunteers, a staff representative, but mostly members of our community who neither work nor volunteer at the station. They're just from the community. They're unpaid. And at times like these, after getting out of a meeting long past 2 a.m., I'm sure they're wondering why they do it. At no time in the history of MNF has there ever been such a controversial issue. We owe the 15 board members our thanks, I certainly do, for spending long hours over the past 5 weeks reading letters, talking with listeners, and deciding what's in the best long-term interest of the radio station that we all love. The board president tells me that the board is committed to reviewing the incident, to changing the station's bylaws where necessary to make sure that something like this never happens again. During the time that I was fired, I gained new appreciation for people who are laid off and unemployed, for people who are forced to pay the high cost of COBRA health insurance, and for the homeless. And I'm going to address all those issues in the coming weeks here on the show on Radioactivity. Now the job for all of us is to heal the station and restore it to the healthy position it was on February 17th, and to move it forward so we can hand it off to the next generations. In the short term, I'll be looking for volunteers who can help post news stories on social media. If you're interested, you can get in touch with me at rob@wmnf.org. I'll be recommitting to my major goal here at WMNF, that is providing quality journalism. We want to provide you with the best information possible about our community, our state, our country, and our world. We want to provide that information, especially if the mainstream media has yet to cover it. We want to go to where the silence is, as Amy Goodman says. We want to give voice to the voiceless. Our mission, as you know, includes peace and equality and social justice. These should be our primary concerns as we cover news and host public affairs programs on WMNF. Our mission is not to talk about Hollywood stars or simply repeat what we saw on TV last night. Our mission is to not talk junk science or to come to these microphones unprepared. Community radio has a long tradition of being the place where leading civil rights activists, authors, groundbreaking musicians, peace activists, and others trying to change our world for the better get their first exposure. Community radio stations carried major investigative reporting on such things as the My Lai massacre in Vietnam and the Iran-Contra scandal. We've heard from people who were subject to American bombing in Iraq on community radio, especially on programs like Democracy Now! Bob Dylan did his first radio interviews on community radio stations. Some of the nation's best journalists and authors have gotten their start or been interviewed when no one else would put them on the air on community radio. These stations around the country have been the voice of diversity for so many people and provided a space for low and moderate income people to be heard. The last 5 weeks show us what people power can do, that when we get together and work on an issue, we can win. There will be other more important issues than this one to address in the future. Maybe it'll be a president who wants to carry out another unjust war. Maybe it'll be another housing crisis. Maybe it'll be another local environmental issue. It will need people to power up again, to rise up and get active. In the last 5 weeks, MNF took a deep hit financially. We lost tens of thousands of dollars as people withdrew their support. I don't think the full extent of the damage has really been calculated. Some people say they will take us out of their wills because of what happened. The last 5 weeks have been tough on all of us, tough on listeners, tough on the board, tough on people who volunteer, tough on the staff that works on the station, tough on the very fabric that held the MNF community together. We need to begin the process of healing. One of the steps, as I mentioned, the board is looking to reform our bylaws and procedures. Some people have said they're interested in attending board meetings or running for the board, now more than ever. Some people want to become new volunteers, both behind the scenes and on the air. If you have comments or suggestions about WMNF, about the way we could improve it, we welcome those comments. You can write the station at WMNF@WMNF.org. One of the big things that you can do to help us reverse the crisis situation we've been in the past month and a week is to help us fix that financial deficit. Hundreds of people withdrew their donations when I was fired. Now I'm asking everyone who cares to make a donation to WMNF, especially those who withdrew theirs during the past 5 weeks. But don't just send a donation. Tell us how we can improve, how we can serve you better. There is a space for comments when you donate online at WMNF.org, or you can call our front desk right now at 813-238-8001. Julie at our front desk is overworked, so please give her some time to answer the call. But you can call 813-238-8001 to make a donation. And there's no waiting if you want to donate online on our secure website, WMNF.org. WMNF is moving forward. Our listeners are energized, and I'm sure they'll help guide us. Many thanks to all the people who spoke on my behalf over the past 5 weeks. Many of the people who spoke out talked about our mission, and I agree. We've also heard a lot about social media, and we'll hear more in the next few days. We'll be adding more to social media. But social media alone is not a cure for the problems at WMNF. If what we produce at MNF is not good journalism, and if it doesn't align with our mission, and if production values are low, no amount of social media will fix that. The station is coming back together. The healing process has begun. There's reason to believe that the station's future is very bright, and we want you to be part of it. The station has been one of the most successful community radio stations in the country for the past 40 years, and with your help, it will continue that successful run for the next 40 years. Thank you so much for everything you've done for the station. We're going to open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. A bunch of people have made donations online. I just want to thank Kathleen from Tampa. Kathleen Oxhorn made a donation this morning. Thank you very much. Made a couple of donations. Thank you, Kathleen. Robin Smith from St. Petersburg made a $60 contribution. Thank you very much. Phil Chamberlain made a contribution. Phil, thank you so much from Ruskin, Florida. Thanks for your nice contribution. Thanks to Lenzo Canty from Tampa, made a $100 contribution. A big fan of Sunday Forum. Thanks, Lenzo, for that nice contribution. Jim Shirk from Tampa made a $120 contribution. Thank you very much. And thanks to some more people. Here's a $40 donation from Carol Shores in St. Petersburg. Carol, thank you very much. She likes the Saturday Soulful Soiree. Thanks to Robert Lindy from the Tradition School of Herbal Studies. He likes sustainable living and alternative health. Thank you, Robert. Good to hear from you. And here's an anonymous donation from Lori de Florida, $150 donation. The person likes all of WMNF. And again, you can make your contribution at WMNF.org. Kathleen Bennett likes sustainable living and alternative health. And it's from Kitty and Bob in Kitty and Bob, who are listening in St. Petersburg, and they're glad to have me back. Thank you, Kitty and Bob, for that. Just a few more donations. People we want to thank. John is in Dunedin. He made a $100 contribution. John, thank you very much. And thanks to P.W. Fenton from Hudson, a $100 contribution. Thank you for doing that. Anonymous made a $100 contribution. Thank you, Anonymous, for that contribution. Eileen simply writes, welcome back, Rob. You've been sorely missed. May you receive the love and affirmation always. MNF lost a part of its soul when you were gone, and it feels good to have you back. Eileen, thank you very much. I think we should also talk about the issues in the news. A lot going on in Tallahassee, and we could talk about the issues raised on Florida this week. 813-239-9663. Rob sent in a $10 contribution. He's in St. Petersburg. Rob, thank you for that. And more contributions have come in. 813-239-9663. Robin in Bismarck, North Dakota sent in a $20 contribution. Robin, thank you so much. And we're getting a lot of comments. Roxanne and Paul, Roxanne Palmer in Tampa made a $5 contribution in the tip jar. She went to WMNF.org. And Bogna Sturzbecker from Largo made a $35 contribution. Bogna, thank you very much. And I'm seeing a lot of people commenting, so I'm going to try to read some of these comments, too. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to talk about some of the big issues in the news. Cher Tanner in Indian Rocks Beach just made a $100 contribution. Cher, thank you very much. And it is great to hear from you. And Suzanne House made a $25 contribution. Well, I think, you know, at some point, we got to start talking about the issues in the news. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And if you want to comment about something that's in the news, especially this effort to roll back Amendment 4, also this proposal to expand toll roads here in Florida, the nexus between massage parlors and politics here in Florida, and also whether or not Florida is really a purple state or is turning more and more red. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Susan on Anna Maria Island. Susan, thanks a lot for calling. What would you like to comment about?
Hi, Rob. I can't even think of stuff in the news right now. I just want to say how happy I am that you're back. I'm just so ecstatic, and I will continue to support WMNF. I hope it heals well and, you know, gets back to normal, and just, I appreciate that you're back.
All right, Susan, thanks. And thanks for always being there for us. Let's go to Rob in Lutz. Rob, you're on M&F. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Yeah, Rob, it's so good to have you back. And thank God for that. And also thank Chris Ingram from WWBA, 820 AM, for having you on the show a few weeks ago. I really enjoyed talking to you then. And I'm so glad you're back. Now, to get to an issue about the prisoners getting their voting rights back, there's something the Republicans should realize, that just because someone's been in jail doesn't mean they're going to vote Democrat. So they're shooting themselves in the foot while trying to shoot the enemy at the same time.
Yeah, not everybody who has spent time as a felon in prison is going to vote Democratic. They might lean Democratic, but it's a pretty diverse group that's been in prison. Some are white collar people. They may not vote for the Democrats. You know, I think the big sticking point to me in following that proposed legislation in Tallahassee is our court costs part of the sentence, or are they part of like a fee that every county imposes? And the judge has nothing to do with it. And
right.
The law, the amendment says once they pay their, once they fulfill their sentence, but it doesn't say anything about court costs.
Yes, it's a shameful reneging on something that the entire state voted upon. So it just makes them look very bad.
All right, Rob, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, sir. Thank
All right.
So
good
much.
To hear from you. And you are listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for tuning in. Let's go to Nancy in Tampa. Hey, Nancy, you're on MNF. What would you like to comment about?
Hey, welcome back.
It's good to be back.
I'm so glad you're there. I was, wow. Anyway, terrific. And, about this sitting on the felony, something that all the people voted for. That just goes to show you. So I don't trust DeSantis or that crew that's up there now at all, because we got promises to keep, and we're not doing it. We're just not doing it, and I don't see that we ever will. So
yeah,
okay.
the numbers on that too. Potentially 1.5 billion people could have their voting rights restored if they didn't block them by saying you've got to pay court fees, and some of those court fees can amount to $300, $500, $1,000. So,
okay.
if you're an ex-felon and you're looking for work, and that was the last thing you did, let's say you did all the other parts of your sentence and you fulfilled that, how are you going to pay that last, $50, $300, $500, $1,000?
Well, I have an idea. Let's have some parties. Let's have parties all over the state. Well, let's start here and go out to the Hitchin Post, or if that's even still there. And, and have a party and raise some money for these guys to get their court costs paid. What do you say?
Well, it might be one way to do it.
To get together and do that.
That might be one way to do it. All right, Nancy.
Just a thought.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Thanks a lot. Thanks for suggesting it, too. And let's go to Teresa in St. Petersburg. Hi, Teresa. You're on M&F. What would you like to say?
I would like to say I'm so glad you're back, and you are a class act.
Well, thank you for that. So is there anything in the news you'd like to comment about?
Yes, I'd like to comment about Amendment 4. It's just another way for the Republicans to suppress the Democrats from voting. I mean, it's just what it is. They don't do anything that we want. We have passed these amendments, and they just don't listen to our voices. And I don't understand what's wrong with Florida people that voted for these people, that they're still there. They don't listen to our voices.
Yeah, a few years ago, we decided that we wanted to spend more money on conservation and buying land for conservation, and we agreed
to
send. They ignored it. Yeah.
Medical marijuana. I don't smoke marijuana. I think it should be recreational. But I voted, let me smoke it. I don't care. It's a good, from what I understand, the medical benefits are phenomenal. So I'm like, smoke it. Do whatever you want with it.
Well, that may be the next step. I think there is going to be an effort to try to get the medical or recreational marijuana on the ballot. Yeah,
works for me. I mean, I ain't gonna smoke it, but doesn't do anything for me. But if I needed it medically, it'd be different.
That's true.
So I'm like, let them do it. I don't care.
All right, Teresa. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Great to hear from you. And here's I'm not going to read this person's name, but he and I go way back, and he runs a local company, and he says that we have not always seen eye to eye, but he is glad that I'm back. And I'm not going to out you, sir. We've had long conversations via email over the years. Thank you so much, and you know who I'm talking about. This is a person who has a more conservative point of view than I do, and he's welcoming back, and I'm really honored by that. Because I do think that having smart, thoughtful conversations, not just conversations, I mean, I try to bring on a lot of great guests. Tomorrow, I'm planning to have Daniel Ruth on this show. That's going to be one of my guests tomorrow. We're going to talk about the Tampa City elections and also talk about state government a little bit more than we did today. So Daniel Ruth will be back for one day only tomorrow with me at 11 o'clock. Let's go to Terry in St. Petersburg. Terry, thanks for calling.
Well, welcome back. I'm glad to have you back.
Thank you.
Just wanted to say, you asked whether Florida was still a purple state. I don't think it's a purple state. In fact, I question whether it's even a democracy at this point. You all covered this a little while ago, too, but every single time the voters do something, the legislature thwarts our will. We wouldn't have to have all these constitutional amendments if we had a state legislature that was responsive to the demands of the people. Ours is not, which is why we're always petitioning to get things on the ballot and have constitutional amendments. And then we do that, and once again, the legislature ignores it, just like Amendment 1, the marijuana situation, transit. We can go back for years and find ways that the legislature has just thumbed their noses at us. In addition, the districts are so gerrymandered at this point that they're really not at all representative of the population of Florida. I don't know what we can do about all this. I think one of the reasons people don't vote is because they are seeing that, what difference does it make? They're not going to do what I want anyway. It's very frustrating living in Florida right now.
Terry, your point about gerrymandering is so important because we're heading into the next round of a redrawing of the districts after we get the census. In a year, they're going to redraw the districts after that. We have the fair voting, we have the fair vote amendment here in Florida that's supposed
to subvert.
Yeah, exactly. So, and here's the other problem too. I'm agreeing with you. The Florida Supreme Court is now controlled by a majority of conservatives. That's the way the ball bounces when you elect a conservative governor after conservative governor. So now, if people decide to challenge districts, if they claim in the next round, in 2 years, that the districts are gerrymandered, they're going to have a really tough time with this new Florida Supreme Court. They are not likely to listen to people that bring a challenge. And gerrymandering is still a huge problem, despite having those two fair vote amendments that we have in the state constitution. I think you're spot on.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a huge problem. And with the court, we used to be able to at least go back and rely on the courts to get some victories, and now that's going to be problematic.
So what do you do about it? I mean, you don't want people not to vote. I mean, everybody should take part in the process. So how do you convince people that there's still a reason to vote?
That's a hard question. We need more activism, though, rather than less. I think we need to continue reaching out and educating people about how these elected officials are not acting in our best interest. The majority of people in Florida want the Medicaid expansion. We have one of the highest numbers of uninsured populations in the state, and yet the legislature won't even consider it. We just need to keep active and keep reaching out to people saying, look, you know, we can get better people in office. We need to get rid of the ones because these people are not your friends.
All right, Terry, thanks a lot. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thank you.
All right. Good to hear from you. Well, I'm Rob Lori. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. I'm back after 5 weeks. A lot of people are donating online and making those contributions. You can make a contribution, too. The station lost at least $35,000 over the past 5 weeks, and you can help us close that gap by making a contribution online at WMNF.org, or you can call us at 813-238-8001 if you want to help us stay financially strong in the future. Let's go to Kevin in Bradenton, who wants to talk about toll roads. Kevin, thanks for calling.
Hey, Rob. Glad that you're back, brother.
Thank you.
I think that the need for WMNF has never been greater than right now at this particular time in our history. But, you know, my question about the toll roads was, so who profits from a toll road? Does that money go back into the coffers of the state? Or isn't that, like, possibly something that some private investor group is going to wind up making the money from? I mean, I just wonder how, if that is the case. I'm not sure. Maybe you could help me. But if the money doesn't go back into the state, then how can we allow somebody else to profit from, you know, from our money that was building?
The toll roads, for the most part, are losing money in the state of Florida. So the state doesn't really make money. Now, there may be a toll road here and there that makes some positive net income that might go back to the local expressway authority. But two groups tend to make money from toll roads. One is the company that operates the toll-paying system, and in our case, Conduit, is making a lot of money in the $6 million figures. I mean, $100 million figures. And then the second group of people are the road builders, and the road building lobby in Tallahassee is pretty strong. So they tend to make money from these projects. I mean, just go out and look at, they're just extending the Suncoast Parkway for a few miles. And look at all the people, and look at all the heavy machinery, and look at all the earth that's being moved up there in that project. It's huge, and there's a lot of money at stake. There's a lot of profit in road building, and the road building lobby, even the road building lobby locally, but the road building lobby in Tallahassee is incredibly strong, and they're going to make a lot of money. But tolls, no. The people of Florida don't make money on those tolls.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Hey, I just want to piggyback also on what your previous caller said. She was so spot on everything. And the one thing I wanted to mention is that the example to help people realize how important it is to vote would definitely be Bush versus Gore, because that was such a close election.
Yeah, such a razor-sharp election, yeah.
Hey, thanks again, Rob.
Kevin, thanks a lot. Thanks for your kind words. Let's go to DeAndre in Riverview. Hey, DeAndre, you're on MNF.
Hey, Rob. I'm so glad you're back.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to hear your voice. I just wanted to add to what the lady said before is that, you know, it is important to vote. But one thing that those who are in the know need to or should try to do is to parcel out some time with others because priorities overwhelm the matter of voting for a lot of people because we don't know what the issues are. We don't know when is best to go ahead and get out to execute those votes. And Florida is so busy. It's so busy that, yeah, ultimately there's little time to, you know, investigate a lot of those things. So friends, people, just clue others in. You know, do the research as well so that can refresh yourselves on different matters because, you know, that's just distinguishing opportunity for many people to vote. It's like people don't care after a while when there's, you know, so much to deal with. So just try to clue others in and get them abreast on those things, and that'll help.
I think you're right. DeAndre, thanks a lot.
No problem.
Thank you for saying that. People should pay close attention. Florida has very interesting politics, too. That's why, you know, you have whole shows devoted to it, like Florida This Week. And tomorrow with Dan Ruth, we're going to talk about Florida politics. Hey, before it gets too deep into this, I want to thank Frank Knox and Sean Canaan and Jan Simpson and a lot of the people who worked behind the scenes while I was gone, because they really did yeoman's work in making sure that MNF continued. Also want to thank you for making a contribution, because we probably had 30 or 40, maybe more donations in the last couple of hours. And thank you for your contribution. If you've made one, you can go to WMNF.org. Sean Canaan in the next hour is going to be discussing what we know so far about the Mueller investigation. We haven't seen the complete report. We've got a 4-page summary that's been related to us. We're going to hear about the Mueller investigation in the next hour right here on 88.5 FM. So stick around for that. And DeAndre, thanks. Let's go to Matt in Odessa. Matt, you're on MNF. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Rob.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Really missed you, brother.
Thank you.
I was really heartbroken when I read that in the paper. I'm glad you're back on. What I wanted to talk about was the moral dilemma that aspiring politicians face when they get elected and then they realize that they have to swallow all the campaign, or all the lobbying contributions they can so that their opponent doesn't get them, and then how they are then beholden to those interests and how they have to give up all their ethics and all their integrity to become a politician. It just must be demoralizing.
Yeah, you know, if you do it the traditional way, if you're running for Congress, you got to raise several thousand dollars, maybe tens of thousands of dollars a day in between elections. But what about those people like, and this is an endorsement, but Bernie Sanders, who says, look, donate on my website, or Beto O'Rourke, who says, donate on my website. Some are saying they won't take any money from PACs. I mean, is that the way to do it, is to just say, I want to get those small individual $20 and $50 contributions?
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Yeah. That's the only guys that you can really support, because they have a chance, because they won't be caught in that dilemma of choosing between the huge contributions or keeping their integrity.
Yeah, I agree. Matt, thanks a lot. That is the problem of our politics. I think money is the problem of our politics today. Matt, thanks. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Sean. He's coming up next. He's going to be talking about that Mueller report and what we know so far about it. Thanks to Blanny Whalen. She put this show on Facebook on video today. Thanks, Blanny. This is 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg. I'm Rob Lori. It's good to be back. And now stay tuned for the NPR News.